Well, good morning, everyone. Good to see you. We welcome visitors with us. We greet those who are live streaming, and it is a blessing to enjoy the spring day, but so much more to use it as a day of worship to God and fellowship with each other and how blessed we are to be here. We simply refer to them as the Boyd Boys, Mike, Scott, and Bobby Joe. But Lori and I had a nickname for them, and we called them the Darlins. Not because they were quick-fingered virtuosos with bluegrass music, but because they never talked. Now, I know this is 2 weeks in a row I've used highbrow culture. Last week, Shakespeare, and today, Andy Griffith. But I thought that this North Carolina crowd, of which I am part now, that you would get this reference. It was shortly after I left home to go to college. I would come back and I would visit, and my dad has had different business, little small businesses through the years and stuff, and so he always had people who worked for him. And my parents had sort of a small farm that I grew up on, and we had cows and things like that when I was growing up, but quite a bit of land to manage, and Dad would hire people to help. And when I was away to college, I would come back, and there appeared these teenage boys out, like, mowing grass. And I knew these boys, the family. I knew their grandfather and their father, and they had sort of grown up while I had gone to college, and they were teenagers. And they were raw material. They were 100%, when I say darlings, you got a picture. They were very shy, backward. They didn't talk to you, and they didn't talk to each other a whole lot. And they were roughly dressed. They were not refined. They came from working poor, emphasis on poor. But they were hard workers, and so Dad would hire them. And after he started using them for more crude jobs, he started getting them to do more advanced things like paint. And it was clear these boys had not had a lot of training, and so Dad would just train them how to do things like paint. And they were a work in progress. On one occasion, it happened to be the first time that Lori came back with me. We were dating, and she came back to visit where I was from, that something happened. Dad had me working in one part of our land on something, and he and Mike Boyd were clearing brush, and Dad gave Mike a chainsaw to operate. And this is a teenage boy, and Dad was trying to hold some limbs down while he cut up some brush, and Mike dropped the chainsaw on a knot on a limb, and the chainsaw jumped and cut Dad's finger really bad. And Mike was really upset, and Dad had to go to the doctor, and it's a long story, but Lori, who had never driven on mountain roads, had to drive him as he's smelling salts because he was so cut so badly. But Dad didn't get rid of the Boyd Boys because of that. He kept working with them. A few years later, Dad started a mobile home business. He was selling mobile homes, installing mobile homes, moving mobile homes. And lo and behold, he just hired Mike and Scott Boyd as his crew. And he taught them how to drive the toter and move mobile homes, how to set mobile homes, how to grade the lot, how to hook the electricity and the plumbing to it, how to repair one when they would buy a used one and fix it up. He had them doing everything over the years. Eventually, after a few years, Dad phased out his business and the Boyd Boys went on. Today, they have their own construction company. They have equipment, and their specialty is putting in municipal water lines. And they're doing really well. But if you could only see these boys when they were 14, 15, 16 years old, you would think they're not going to amount to much. You know why? Okay, so. But here's what happened. They just needed somebody to work with them. They just needed somebody to give them a chance and to show them and to be patient with them. And my dad was great at that. They just needed somebody to work with them. Spiritually, sometimes we feel inadequate, weak. We feel like a novice, awkward, discouraged. And one of the most devastating things we experience spiritually is that we believe, we feel like that there's nobody to help us. There's no one who cares. We're just sort of hanging out there on our own. Nothing could be further from the truth. You should take heart because there's someone who will work with you, and that's Christ. What I want to talk to you about today is just that from the Gospel of Luke. I want you to look with me at a variety of passages from that gospel that show the ways in which Jesus will work with you. First of all, he'll work with you if you're searching. We read the incident in Luke chapter 19 about a man named Zacchaeus. We read beginning in verse 1, speaking of Christ, he entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was. But on account of the crowd, he could not see because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to that place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. When they saw it, they all grumbled. "He has gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner." And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, the half of all my goods I give to the poor. And if I've defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." And Jesus said to him, "Today, salvation has come to this house, since he's also a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus. And when Jesus saw Zacchaeus, he saw in this man a searcher. He saw in this man a person who needed to be saved. And so Jesus invited himself to his house so he could engage Zacchaeus and teach Zacchaeus and help Zacchaeus so he could work with him. Because he saw that Zacchaeus was seeking. If you want to know about God and the way of salvation, you want to know about Christ, then Christ will work with you. Note that Zacchaeus came with an attitude. "I'm willing to do what I need to do what's right." And he starts it by saying, "Lord, I'll follow you in doing what's right." And note that Jesus matched his interest here. You see that Jesus is passing through and there is a large crowd, but he singles this one man out to go and spend time with. It's because he saw this man was seeking him. If you have interest in Jesus, he's got interest in you. If your interest is keen, he's going to reach out to you and he's going to help you learn of him. If the Creator designed a fish, the salmon, that is born in the headwaters of a stream hundreds of miles from the sea, and that fish migrates to the sea and is able to make its way back to the very place where he was hatched. That same creator can make it possible for you to find your way to him. Christ will work with you if you're trying to learn and grow. If you look in Luke chapter 11, a few pages before, at what Jesus says here, and understand what Jesus is doing. Jesus, his whole thrust of activity was teaching people and doing these signs and miracles and wonders. Teaching and doing signs. Teaching and doing signs. And it's the signs that get their attention. It's the teaching that guides them. And this is what Jesus says in Luke 11, verse 9 and 10. And I tell you, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and the one who knocks it will be open. You can put all these incidents we're looking at together and you can understand the framework of what he's saying here. He's not talking about if you want to seek to be a millionaire. He's not talking about if you want to seek to understand quantum physics. Jesus is offering the kingdom of heaven. Jesus is offering eternal life. Jesus is offering salvation. He's offering the way to God. And in that context, he says, if you seek it, you'll find it. Some of you may know Gary Sandusky. I don't know if you do. He's got some, used to have some boys in North Carolina. He's an old friend of mine. He's a preacher. He is a very effective preacher. He's gone all over the world preaching in Africa and Asia. Gary loves to tell the story. He had a little bit of background about the church and just a little bit, but he was just living a terrible life. He would say he was at one time a member of a motorcycle gang. I mean, he just did everything. And he said he finally decided to change, and he walked into a church, and this is what he said. I'm Gary, and I'm here to learn about God, baptism, and all that stuff. That's how much he knew. He said, I was ignorant. He said that. And he spent the last several decades going everywhere preaching the gospel now. Don't feel bad if you don't know a lot or if anything about God or the Bible or Jesus. It's okay. Do you want to learn? Do you want to learn about God and baptism and all that stuff? Because that's all you need. Because Christ is going to work with you. He has left, but he has not left us without help. After he left, he sent the Holy Spirit, who guided the apostles and prophets of the New Testament to write down what we need to know about him and his way. And there are some really incredible things in the New Testament that just challenge the mind, but most of it is just simple teaching and simple stories. We have what we need. The New Testament's like going to school. You get in there and you just learn about who these people are, and learn about what Jesus said and how he wants us to live. It's doable. But you have to understand, if you're going to learn and grow, sometimes the lessons are pretty tough. Like that found in Luke chapter 9, a few pages before, where in Luke chapter 9, we read of this incident beginning in verse 51. When the days drew near for him to be taken up, he set his face to go to Jerusalem. And he sent messengers ahead of him who went and entered a village of the Samaritans to make preparations for it. But the people did not receive him, because his face was set toward Jerusalem. And when his disciples, James and John, saw it, they said, Lord, do you want us to tell fire to come down from heaven and consume them? But he turned and rebuked them. And they went on to another village. A lot of prejudice and a lot of walls between the Samaritans and the Jews. And here a group of Samaritans showed that prejudice when Jesus and his disciples being Jews came through, and John got so worked up and James his brother they wanted to call fire down on him. Did you know that according to what evidence we have, it appears that John would be sort of what you and I would call Jesus' best friend? And what does Jesus do to this disciple that he loved so much? He rebuked him. John needed to learn a lesson here. He needed to understand that this was not the time to call down fire on these people. Christ is going to work with you, and he's going to teach you lessons. Sometimes the lessons are tough, and you may hear some things you don't like. But he gives you those lessons because he loves you. He wants what's best for you. He's going to work with you, but you're going to have to grow and grow out of some things. Christ will work with you if you're doubtful. Flipping over to Luke chapter 7, a couple pages back. In Luke chapter 7, there's an interesting long-distance communication between Jesus and John the prophet. John the prophet, or John the Baptist, was a most courageous figure. He served an important role in the coming of Christ. Before Jesus started to preach publicly, John started preaching and preparing people for the coming of the king. Jesus said of him in this same text, down in verse 28, "I tell you, among those born of woman, none is greater than John." But John has been locked up in prison because of his preaching, especially against the sins of one of the governors. And this is what happens. Luke chapter 7 and verse 18. "The disciples of John reported all these things to him, and John, calling two of his disciples to him, sent them to the Lord, saying, 'Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another?'" Verse 20. "And then when the men had come to him, they said, 'John the Baptist has sent us to you, saying, Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another?'" Now, what's strange about this is that John had prepared the way for Christ, and John had been told by God that you're going to know who the Christ is when the Spirit descends on him. And when John baptized Jesus, the Spirit descended on Jesus, which was John's sign. And John had been going around, at least for a short time, pointing at Jesus and saying, "Behold the Lamb of God." But right now, he's weighed down with doubt. "Are you the one?" Verse 21, "In that hour he healed many people, diseases and plagues and evil spirits, and on many who were blind he bestowed sight. And he answered them," John's disciples who came, the messengers, "Go and tell John what you've seen and heard. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, the poor have good news preached to them, and blessed is the one who is not offended by me." Even John had doubts. But what did Jesus do? He sent word, "John, look at the evidence." What does the evidence say? Christ will work with you if you have doubts. It's interesting how peer pressure works. Sometimes a person is a Christian and they get around people who are not, and they feel pressured to be like them and to think like them and to say things like them and behave like them. The opposite can happen too. Sometimes a person will get around religious people and they see these people who have faith in the Bible and faith in God, and the person thinks, "Well, I better not say some things in front of them. I'm a little embarrassed." Don't be. If you've got doubts about God and the Bible and Christ, don't be embarrassed by that. If you question something and you have a hard time accepting something, even Christ understood that believing has obstacles, that it's a challenge sometimes. Of all people who should know Jesus was the Christ, it should have been John the Baptist. But Christ sent the message. "Here's the evidence, John. Look at it." Don't be embarrassed if you question something or have a hard time accepting something. Ask those questions. But that's the first important step. Ask the question. And the second step is be reasonable and be open. It is bad to be a cynic. "Well, I don't know about all that Bible stuff. I don't know about this Jesus. That's just so far-fetched." And you just keep that in your mind, and then you pull back and you never really explore it. Possibly because a person thinks, well, what if I am convinced? I don't want that. It's not the doubt. It's what you do with it. If you just hang on to it and you become a cynic, you've really hurt yourself. But if you have the doubts and you have the questions and you're wondering and you're like, show me some evidence. Give me some things to think about and look at. Make the case. Give me some answers. Well, Jesus will work with you. He'll supply what you need. Jesus will work with you if you lose your way. In a very powerful combination of incident and teaching, really a parable, look in Luke chapter 15. In Luke 15, once again, Jesus is hanging out with some sinners, and he's criticized for it. He's trying to help them. We read in Luke chapter 15, verse 1, now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to hear him. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. So he told them this parable. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he's lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he's found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I found my sheep that was lost. Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. That's how much Christ cares. If you lose your way and you want to be his lamb, he's going to come looking for you. Even if there are other people around who don't think you're worth finding and saving. That's what these Pharisees were saying to Jesus. Those people you're trying to preach to, they're not worth saving. You're wasting your time. The way Jesus saw these people were precious little lambs who were lost. That's what Jesus thought of them. And you may encounter people, you may encounter your own Pharisees who somehow communicate to you that you're not worth the trouble. Don't listen to them. Jesus knows we lose our way sometimes. And sometimes we lose our way before we know it. I mean, it just happens, not just happens, but it happens, and we see how it happens, but we're in this and we don't know how to get back. So a few weeks ago, I was headed home, got on 240, headed through downtown, and there was a huge traffic jam. There was an accident down at the junction, and I'm like, oh, you know. And I felt a little confident. I thought, yeah, I'm learning these roads. And you know, and it's hard when you're driving to look at that phone and maneuver and all that. And I thought, I think I know how to get out of this. So I got off the interstate, and I thought, I'm going to work my way over to 25 and head toward Weaverville. Well, I went wrong, okay? I turned wrong. And I was on this street, and I thought, well, I'll find my way. It's their blocks, and I can work my way over. And if I need to pull over, I'll look at my phone. Well, it was Town Mountain Road. And the next thing I know, I was going straight up. And there was nowhere to turn around. And I know why it's called Town Mountain Road. And I really didn't enjoy the scenery at the time. But I was looking for a way to turn around, and I couldn't find a place that I could turn around. I went way up on the mountain before I found a place, and I can get back down, and I made it. But I got lost before I knew it. And I thought, how am I going to get back? And I got back. We start valuing the wrong things. We make terrible choices. We pursue vain things. We indulge our flesh. We forget about Christ, and next thing you know, we're lost. But even when we've done that, Christ will work with us. If we're looking for a way to turn around, he'll work with us. He may send somebody in his providence. And if somebody comes to you, and they, out of love, they tell you you're headed in the wrong direction, you need to listen to them. Somehow Christ providentially will work out the events to help you see the error of your ways, help you see how to get back to him. He'll help you. So I've told you about the Boyd boys. Let me tell you about the Fletcher girls. Incredible. So there was this family that the father was actually a relative of my dad's, and my dad studied with and taught the gospel to the mom and the dad. And I remember it. I was a kid. And they had five daughters. Candace, Pam, Kathy, Sylvia, Courtney. And they were in the church for several years. And then at some point, and a lot of this is somewhat of a mystery, I suppose, and there's some explanations, and I'm not going to get into that, but at some point, finally, the mom and dad gave up. They left the Lord. Around the time that the oldest daughter was married, just got married, the others were upper teenage years. The youngest was sort of middle school, a little younger. And there they all went. And occasionally they would be, you know, people at church would see them in the community and things like that. But they were gone. It's gone. And went in a lot of different directions morally. And not all good. 30 years later, I was preaching in Kingsport. 30 years later, out of the blue, the two oldest girls walked into church one day. They had been baptized as teens. And they were received with open arms. In a very short order, they made it known that they were going to change their lives and come back to the Lord, and they did. The two oldest girls were restored to Christ. A few years later, the oldest one died, and I preached her funeral. Not long after that, the husband of one of the daughters that had come back was baptized. Not long after that, one of the daughters did not come back, but her daughter, who had not been around the gospel at all, started coming around, and she was converted. Not long after that, the youngest started coming around. She was baptized, her husband, and I think now at least one of her kids. Then, the most lost sheep of them all. You name it, she had done it. Had gotten sick and had moved back. She'd been living in Texas. The fourth one, she's about my age, she moved back. And she was restored to Christ. Over 30 years later, four of the daughters, a granddaughter, and several in-laws all ended up saved. How'd they get back? I've talked to my dad about it many times. There were some things we still didn't understand about what caused the first two to come back. But once the first two came back, then it triggered something in all the others. It's never too late, and you're never so far gone. No matter how long it's been, no matter how many awful things you've done, there's a way back. You know why? Because Christ, if you'll turn, or if you're trying to turn, Christ is going to come looking for you. And he's going to find a way to get you back. Because he loves you. He wants to save you. In a very real sense, he'll go looking for you. And so I want you to consider these two things. That Christ will work with you, and it's because of who he is. He is a helpful, serving, and patient Lord, proven by statements like Hebrews 11, which says in verse 28, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden," says Jesus, "and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." This is who Jesus is, according to the writer of the book of Hebrews in the 4th chapter and verse 14. "Since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confessions. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need." That's who he is. The great shepherd. The loving Lord, who will do everything that needs to be done to help us. So here's the second point in light of all that. Christ will work with you, so don't put your rejection of him off on him. If you've used the excuse that no one understands, that no one cares, that no one's going to help you, then understand you're wrong. Those are excuses. If you think that's why you shouldn't be a Christian, or because you've stopped living as a Christian and that's the reason, is because there's nobody to help you, you're not dealing with reality here. You're making excuses. Christ will work with you. It's up to you, not him. He's already committed. You know how we know he's committed? Two things. By those truths that we just read about him, and by all those incidents where time and time again, Christ is working with people. Whether they're lost, whether they're confused, whether they have doubts, whether they're searching and trying to find their way, Christ will work with you. He's already demonstrated that, which means he's committed to do that. So don't pass it off on him. This is all up to you. Isn't it great to have someone to work with you? And when I was telling you about the Boyd Boys, maybe you thought of somebody who helped you when you were young to work with you in something. Maybe it was, you know, in school or working in a job or teaching you a skill or something like that. It's great to have somebody like that to help you. But the greatest thing to have is this Savior of ours. This Lord who's going to work with us spiritually. He is there when we need him. He can and he will give us the help that we need at just the right time and just the right way. He's not going to write us off. He'll be the last one to do that. So, I got to watch how I say this because I said it wrong one time. Years ago when I was doing some prison work, at one time I said, years ago when I was in prison, I did that one time. So it's okay if I was in prison, the Lord's going to work with me. But there were a couple of inmates in this state penitentiary in Kentucky near where I was living that had been converted, and this other preacher was working with them, and he was moving, and he asked me if I wanted to take over the studies, and so I did. And so once a month I would go over there and study with these guys. And it was a penitentiary, and they were in for some serious stuff, really serious. And so there were a lot of protocols. And the first thing, I had to go into this waiting room with all the other visitors. And we had to wait because they had to go call the guy. And they got strip search coming in and going out. So it took a while. And so I would sit there. And it was an interesting experience working with these men. But the waiting room was equally as interesting regarding who came to visit the inmates. And one day I came home and it finally dawned on me. I told Lori, I said, you know, usually when I'm in that waiting room, I'm the only man. And I knew who these people were because I was sitting and listening to the conversations. There's something about people who visit inmates, they have a lot to say to each other. So I'd sit and listen to these conversations. And it was all mothers and wives and girlfriends. A lot of mothers. And it dawned on me, you know, a mother is one of the last ones to give up on you. Probably. But that's not really accurate, is it? Your best friend may give up on you. Your brother or sister may give up on you. Your mom and dad may give up on you. There is one who will never give up on you if you don't want him to. And if you want him, he'll never give up on you. That's Jesus Christ. He's sitting on an eternal throne, waiting to pour upon you eternal mercy and to work with you, whatever you need. Praise be to Jesus Christ. So we appreciate Brother Dave stepping in and leading, and he's going to lead us in another song. And we're going to sing this song in just a second as we stand together. And as we do so, if there is a soul who wants to communicate that you're lost and you want to find your way to Christ and you want to take action today to do that, then we'll be glad to help you. Won't you come as we stand and sing?